netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
This is FX Podcast for Monday, March 6th, 2006. I'm Jeff Huser. I'd like to start out by thanking everyone who came out to our FX Guide Live Foundry event at RFX in Hollywood last week. We had a lot of fun putting that together and hope to do more events like that in the future. Okay, so let's get right into our podcast. This week we present part 4 of our popular matte painting series. In a busy visual effects house, there's always lots to look at as you walk through the facility. If you have a matte painter or a concept artist, it's rare to walk by their monitor without stopping to see what they're working on. In my case, that artist would be Alp Altiner. We're both currently working at Hydraulics in Santa Monica, where he does amazing concept designs and matte paintings for film and commercial projects. Mike Seymour talks now with Alp about the future of matte painting. Mike?
Well, thanks for that, Jeff. And thanks for joining us on the line. It's your Sunday night there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So thanks for giving up your Sunday evening. Let's start by discussing what projects you're currently working on.
Currently, I'm working on X-Men 3. There's also quite a bit of things coming up on 300, which is Frank Miller's next movie. There's also Poseidon, which is another film project that we're currently working on.
They all sound very interesting. What I wanted to discuss with you today is, I guess, one of the latest trends in matte painting, which is the use of camera projection and the idea that we're moving away from just a still 2D matte painting into what might be described as more of a 3D environment. You've done quite a lot of work in that area.
Yes, I actually have done 2D and 3D matte paintings, and still today we are taking a tremendous amount of advantage of 3D projection, just because most of the time you want to make sure that you have freedom for the camera to sort of translate the director's vision on this.
I guess there are two ways of looking at this. The first is that that it's actually possible to do stuff in 3D, and that gives you perspective lines and scale and stuff, and then take that 3D picture and then paint over the top of it, which would produce still just a 2D image at the end of the day. And the other one is to do the 2D work and then project it over rough three-dimensional shapes, thus giving you depth and allowing the camera to move off axis a little.
Right, exactly.
So tell me, how do you approach one of these, and how common is it for you to use camera projection?
Well, usually there's still quite a bit of work that's done that's 2D matte paintings, and when I refer to 2D matte paintings, these are, after looking at the shot, depending on what's needed, sometimes these may be lock-off shots, and there's still, various films out there where you see this. In this case, the goal is really to either add to the scene or replace certain things, and if we have a live action plate, we usually take a look at the scene, and we try to decide on how we can integrate what needs to be added to that particular shot, and in this case, let's see, if we're working on doing extensions on a building, depending, again, what the scene is. We would basically create the files using Photoshop, using various photography. And if it's more of a sci-fi or a fantasy film, you may actually go in and actually do various paintings in Photoshop. And then combining these, eventually they will be integrated into the file. And again, if it's a lock-off shot, it's really simple. You basically deliver the file and it gets merged with the plate and eventually become a 2D matte painting. 2D and a half and 3D matte paintings, it really depends. Sometimes you can really take just a simple little plane in Maya or in any other 3D program, and by creating a painting again in Photoshop, you basically project this particular painting onto a plane in 3D, and then the camera may have some sort of tilt. It could be either, a side or up and down tilt, just so we have parallax in this. And this is done, again, using a matte painting. Sometimes it gets a bit more complicated. If we have a scene where we need to fly through the environment, some of the foreground elements can also be created in 3D, which actually helps tremendously with perspective. Sometimes it can be very time-consuming trying to paint everything from scratch or using various photography, especially if you don't have any type of reference. The best thing to do is really to sort of, do a previs and then create all the additional geometry in 3D, and then again, you can texture these files, and once they're textured, depending on the camera move, you can still go in, actually, and touch these up in Photoshop, just so they have, you know, the wear and tear and aging, just so it looks as photoreal as possible, and then if the camera is flying over this first particular layer, which could be, in this case, a 3D model, it could be a tower that you're flying over to reveal the rest of the environment, that basically becomes a 3D matte painting, which is a combination of building the models, texturing them, and then things that are further away, they could be sitting on a plane, again, using projections to create this entire scene, so we have a believable environment with various 2D and 3D layers.
So that's something that you would be, for example, using commonly on a film like X-Men 3, this idea of building up the file and then projecting it and possibly even going back and aging or adding extra detail to 3D elements?
Right. I mean, there's recently I worked on a matte painting projection, which is, again, an extension, a building we had to extend. And the idea is to build and match move because the camera has a certain type of move. So after you have the shot tracked, you have now the move from the camera, which you then actually go in and build the extension of the building in 3D. And then what you do is you either go in and just have some sort of generic texture for the geometry, or else you can go in and create a projection from a certain frame. And once we have the projection, we basically put this on top of the 3D geometry, and we're able to have that photoreal sort of look or matte painting extending the building just so it basically blends and looks seamless at the end of the file.
Well, let's talk about a shot that we can have a look at, and we're going to post some of the JPEGs that you've sent us on our website. Can you walk us through this example piece that that you've done for yourself?
Yes, this is actually a part of a personal project, which is called The Unknown. It's a graphic novel, but in this case, this is a matte painting that was also showcased and published in the Ballistic Matte Painting book. The idea was to be able to create this castle, and I wanted to be able to have some sort of move into the painting. I wanted to get closer to the individual that we have in the scene, which is on top of the bridge. So the layout is really sort of broken down into sketches and some of the quick color keys just to get an idea, you know, what the environment looks like.
What did you
so
do those in?
First, I did a bunch of quick layouts using an ink pen.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to sort of work on my composition and see how I could frame it from the first frame. After that was done, I went into Photoshop. Using Photoshop and Painter, I basically started coloring these just so I could get an idea of the lighting and what kind of colors I would use in the scene. And then I finished a sort of pencil sketch that kind of gave me the idea on what my first frame is going to look like, and I continued in Photoshop, taking various elements. I was looking for a lot of photography and some other references that I shot to be able to bring this more into a photoreal environment by taking some of the photography and integrating them into the parts of the cave. And also for the background, I basically used various photos of rocks and again, some cave scenes. So I could basically have this image sort of starting looking more photoreal, and those are the kind of breakdowns that you can see with these sketches.
So when you're designing for a camera projection, presumably you're going to be using layers a lot in Photoshop because by the nature of the camera moving, you're going to see stuff revealed that was obscured in perhaps, you know, the first frame of the shot. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, first of all, I had the freedom to sort of play it, in a different way with this particular shot, because sometimes, I mean, it depends on whatever project, if it's a, you know, commercial project or a film project. Sometimes if there's no live action, you start everything with a concept sketch, some sort of visual development to get an idea. And in this case, this was pretty much the same with the gate tutorial, that I wanted to be able to sort of know what this is going to look like. The composition was truly done in 2D, started off with a concept sketch, and then I actually built the geometry according to what I had as a sketch. By bringing this image into Maya, I matched the perspective, and I started building the the geometry, which is part of the two sort of sided gate, and then the bridge, I try to match that and model the scene in Maya by using this as a template sort of guideline. And sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes you'll have, you know, some sort of photography or Ovidia set. Or you can, again, like I said, it just really depends on how you want to approach it. But in this case, it was easier because I already had a concept sketch for this. Then I went into Maya and set up a camera and the lens information. And I was able to go in and sort of model the setup. And now I have the scene in 3D. And I just put a couple little elements in the foreground just so I could fly over them and have the parallax effect, in this case, of this sketch.
So if this was a piece that was, for example, going to a feature film at 2K, what resolution would you do the matte painting at that you would then use to project over the geometry?
It really depends. I mean, again, usually 2048 by 1556 is my regular setup. That's how I would start. But depending on the move, if the camera is really zooming in, to be able to get the most out of the painting, and then in this case, obviously, certain files will be projected onto it, and you'll have some of these sketches and screenshots of the 3D geometry, I would really go in and try to start with a 4K file, which would be 4,000 pixels by maybe 3,000, so I can really have a high-res texture or a photo that I'm using to have the detail and all the textures within the file, so when I am zooming in Maya, into the file, that it still keeps all the values and all the information that I would like to. And if the camera is moving from left to right, maybe there's a tilt or any other move that's not just zooming in to the main focal point, in this case with the skate tutorial, I would then probably go even higher, depending on how wide the shot would be. So maybe if I'd like to go from left to right, I will probably go in and create my file a lot bigger, so I have this area that would be visible in the beginning of the camera move and slowly go towards where I would like to end it at the last frame.
And so I'm wondering about getting scale into a shot like this, changing the subject slightly. Do you design to allow yourself to have little things that would denote scale, like, I don't know, I mean, obviously the obvious one, and it's pretty well overused now, is a flock of birds in the distance, but something like flickering torches or fire or something that is going to give scale. I mean, how much, when you're designing the shot, are you just going for the aesthetic, and how much are you going for thinking, how am I going to sell this?
Right. Well, in a production environment, it's really different depending on what your responsibilities are. You know, sometimes I may be working on a show where I am purely hired for the purpose of creating the matte paintings, And most of the time, everything is a team effort. So there's a lot of people that work on one file or one sequence. And if we need to integrate these torches or anything else, most of the time that will be done in the compositing. But if you have more creative freedom in the beginning, while you're actually designing the concept sketch of it, obviously you go in and sort of integrate the ideas the director may have, or a couple of the things that you think that will complement the shot, and then you can go in and sort of add the fog and a couple of the torches and maybe some lights and maybe bats flying off the camera. These could be elements that are sort of created while you're doing the visual development as a concept sketch that can be sort of, you know, later on looked at and go, okay, well, you know, we really like these elements. We would like to integrate them in there, and then there would be maybe another team of individuals that can, you know, create certain animations, set up these lightings, which can be done also in 3D, or it can be faked in 2D in the compositing stage. And again, at the very end of the shot, sort of integrated with a slap comp, and you can take a look at some of the things that are working. And again, depending on the creative, you know, freedom that you have, how much you're involved in the shot, or how much input you can have. It really depends on the production, on the team, and who's really sort of in charge and what kind of decisions people are planning on making.
With that in mind, are you really conscious then of how it's fitting in the edit? What shots are coming left and right of the your shot, just in terms of composition and framing?
Most of the time, when I work in a particular shot, it's really important. You brought up a really good point. It's very important to see what's before and what's after, just so you can sort of match your color correction, you know, not just the look and feel for the file, but also know that if you wanted to integrate lights or a couple other things, and if that really doesn't exist in the live action plate or in the screenplay or in the previs stage, what they have done, you would, you know, at all times obviously double check and make sure that whoever creative director or visual effects supervisor you're working with, if that would be okay to sort of integrate these elements, because that's really the most important part of med paintings, is that you have to start your file with a concept painting or a concept sketch, because you can quickly save yourself time by you know, sort of bringing up what you like and what you don't like. If you're too far into it and you've already done a med painting that has 30-plus layers, it can really get tricky designing the shot, and that's the reason these quick sketches are very helpful for directors or, again, visual effects supervisors to look at and go, okay, I do like this, and maybe let's try to, you know, integrate some of these elements. So, yes, you know, when you're trying to sort of design the shot, it is important to have sort of, you know, sit down with the creative team and see what they like, and most of the time met painters do, you know, add a lot of their ideas in the stage of concepts on how the shot may look like at the very end of it.
One interesting point you brought up there was the idea of the grading of the shot and how the shot is graded relative to the ones either side. With the growth of DI and digital intermediary grading, I'm wondering how much you work for a final look, or how much you expect that the final colorist is going to grade your matte painting.
Right. Well, that really depends on how they have it set up for a particular movie project or commercial, whatever you're working on. Most of the time, color corrections are done DI. You know, at the very end, they will take a look at it and go, okay, we need to change this, or we need to integrate it more. It really depends on what kind of team you're working with and how organized everything is. And sometimes it could be a small project that you're working on that's, you know, for an independent film, or it could be a commercial. It really depends on what's required. But most of the time, what I have done so far is sort of follow, you know, certain colors and corrections with the files that have been provided. That are either, you know, the sequences before the one that I'm working on or afterwards, or sometimes it could be a simple photograph or a reference file that they will give me, that they will say, okay, well, you know, this is what we need to match, or this is these are the colors that we need to stick to. That really depends on the production, and each time it's a little different.
So something that I've noticed in talking to matte painters, and we've talked to a few in this series that we're on now, it comes back to this idea of, and not someone as senior as you, but maybe sort of more junior matte painters who are doing what I'd call almost collage work, in that they're photoshopping up real pictures. And this tends to produce an insanely detailed picture, whereas many of the traditional matte painters, if we go back, you know, to the days of painting on glass, actually had quite rough painterly styles and weren't finicky. I'm wondering how you feel about the level of detail in your pictures, whether, you know, you're projecting them or not. Just generally speaking, are you trying to get very fine detail, or do you feel that sort of is working against the filmic nature of the piece?
I see. Well, detail is really needed most of the time with matte paintings, depending on how close you get to a certain scene, or if you have an object, if it's a 3D object, and you have to, you know, create some textures. Most of the time in film, the word that you'll always hear is photoreal, and the goal is always to make it look better and better and better. So it's you know, it's part of the challenge to make things look more real or believable, and that's really your goal. So painting detail, I usually, regardless of what I work on, I try to add that detail into any kind of matte painting as much as I can. Sometimes, obviously, things that are further away may not need that much detail. Even if you know, take a look at certain photos in real life, as they get further away, they kind of lose some of the detail that you would maybe have in the foreground or things that are closer to us. But I think that's the beauty of matte painting, which I enjoy the most, to go in and really try to add all this detail in there. when I was working at Illusion Arts, I had the opportunity to work with Sid Dutton, who's worked on many films, and he used to paint on glass himself. And I was exposed and lucky to see some of his work. And looking at those traditional matte paintings, like you said, I actually saw that, you know, things that are maybe further away didn't have as much detail. But again, the things are closer. They go in and add all this detail, which is also today done digitally. But again, I would say it really depends on the shot. If I'm working on something that maybe has some sort of landscape, you know, and has a lot of trees, maybe some mountains, you can really go in there and use a lot of photographs, and you can also digitally hand paint a lot of this information in there just to get it looking as real as possible. But it gets really crucial and critical when you're dealing with buildings, especially on a daytime shot. If you have things that are receiving a lot of sunlight and it needs to look photoreal, it becomes a challenge, and you do spend most of the time trying to really give as much detail and information as possible into these paintings.
But presumably the actual camera mapping and camera projection stuff we're talking about does help a lot, because once the camera just breaks from being a locked-off shot and moves, especially if it's integrated with live action, that can really help to sell the shot right there, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, again, camera projections are the most of the reason this is being used more and more, and I have also working on Aeon Flux at Hydraulics Visual Effects. What we try to do, we were working on one shot, and it basically started off as a concept sketch, and we wanted to be able to have this futuristic sci-fi city in the scene, and the camera is basically flying over certain parts of this environment that we had. So most of it actually was built in 3D. It was textured, you know, it was lit, all the lighting was done, and even we had to use a lot of paint effects, and we integrated all the bushes and the trees and the grass. There was very little painting done, meaning we didn't really use, 2D matte paintings, but we basically went in and textured the environment, and at the end we really had very good photoreal results. And most of the time you will have a sky. It could be a photograph or a photo that you basically go in and sort of tweak for that particular shot and integrate at the very end, which could sit on a plane in 3D and be projected. But more and more 3D is going to be visible in the near future. Because, you know, the technology is getting a lot better. The computers are going to be able to render faster. And the only downside is that you know, most of the time when you're trying to render these scenes, I mean, it does take a lot of time because you're dealing with various passes. You know, nothing in 3D. You can't just, you know, push a button and say, okay, here it goes, and you have one render that obviously needs a lot of work with these individual passes, that you may have a key light pass. You may have an occlusion pass, and all these combined at the very end with the touch of a compositor is what really brings everything to life. But back to the projection part of the things, yes, that will be used more and more, and we'll probably see even more and more complicated scenes, and especially if we can take further advantage of technologies such as paint effects, we will be able to, you know, have various detail vegetation. This is also seen in a program called Terrigen. Recently, there was a spot that I've seen where it starts, things are looking very convincing. And in the probably near future, this, you know, will be a stage where you have an entire 3D scene with, you know, very dense millions of polygons or billions of polygons that will be rendered that create the entire scene, where you will do less and less projections, but projections are always sort of the time savers, because instead of building all this geometry, you can really go in there and create a really big matte painting that has all the detail, and then project that to sort of create that environment. But again, this all depends on the camera move. You know, if you have a very simple move, most of the time you can get away using this technique. But, you know, flying around a city, doing dive-ins and whatnot, that gets complicated, and that only relies in being able to create this purely in 3D.
It's quite ironic, isn't it? But at the same time that matte painting, which was traditionally, you know, literally an oil painting craft, as that goes more 3D, and becomes more, based on rendering through a camera. There's also a simultaneous growth in concept art, and most of the concept art is the exact opposite. It's literally, you know, a drawing or a painting, even if it's done in Painter or Photoshop. And I know you do a lot of concept art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering whether you're seeing that growth in concept art outside features. Obviously, features have done a lot of concept art. But
right.
It seems to me that there's a growth for concept art in long form and in commercials. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, concept art has been around for many years. It's nothing really new. I think when people entered the digital age, more and more people started using digital tools such as, you know, Photoshop, Painter, and there's another program that I've recently came across called ArtRage. And all these programs really give you the ability and sort of power and freedom to sit there and use your artistic ability and talent to translate something that could be the director's vision or any kind of idea that we visually need to look at. And I think it's going to get more complex where you will be able, just like with the recent Cintiq Wacom tablets where you can draw on your screen, you will be able to really quickly get in there and you know, do some of this type of concept art, which is, you know, considered visual development, and present them to directors or visual effects supervisors for them to kind of look at them. And this is, again, you know, films like Star Wars, they have, you know, the thousands of sheets of concept art that's being done for every little sequence. Just so you have color keys, you have the look and feel of the environment, and the purpose behind concept art is to really see, you know, what the colors are going to be, what kind of mood you're going to have, you know, what kind of elements may be integrated that eventually will become part of the work that the 3D team would build. So I think it plays a huge role in being able to, you know, deliver your client any kind of visuals where they can start letting you know if they like something or not. Most of the time, you know, any company that's trying to work on any kind of concept or project, the goal is really to really understand what is it that the client wants and what is it that we need to be working on. So concepts are very important, just like storyboards or color keys or any kind of, you know, visual sort of art that can break things into sections where you can say, okay, now here's some of the character designs, the environment. And the only thing that I would say that it's going to get more and more detailed, most of the time, some of the concepts that I do at Hydraulics, we're really pushing the limits and we're trying to deliver a lot of concepts that really almost feel, you know, in between matte paintings and concept art. I mean, I still use Photoshop. I still go in and draw some of this stuff. Sometimes I'll scan them in and I'll paint over my sketches. But it really, I think maybe the value has always been there, but just the way it's going to be presented to the future clients may change, meaning that it may have more detail into it where matte paintings that are being used for, you know, lock-off shots may have the same type of option to be presented as a concept sketch, and I hope I'm trying to sort of put these into the right boards to get my point across.
Sure, no, it's a point well made. It's you know, it's absolutely true. And listen, we were lucky enough to have you already have done an interview about your career with Ian, which is on FX blog. So, but I would like to direct people to your forum because, in addition to the rundown we've done on the projection stuff here, there's actually a more detailed tutorial there. And then I believe you're coming out with some DVDs soon.
Yes. The reason I wanted to put the art forum together, you know, I get a tremendous amount of emails. You know, people are kind enough to take their time and send me off sort of the, you know, questions that they have. And sometimes they're students, sometimes they're artists from different fields that are wanting to get into matte paintings, and most of the questions that I get are related to 2D and 3D matte paintings, just because I do, besides the 2D work, I do a tremendous amount of 3D work as well, which is modeling, texturing, and lighting. And I wanted to put a sort of website together where I can share some of these techniques and some of my brushes in Photoshop and sort of have a community where we can exchange ideas. And I also wanted to showcase some of the people that I have been personally admiring for many years. And I wanted to be able to have this sort of community where I can go in and exchange ideas. And I already met quite a bit of people. When I had created the forum, the first tutorial was this particular gate tutorial. And I had a lot of people email me regarding DVDs just because it seems to be a lot more easier for someone to, you know, have this in front of them and also at the same time be able to watch a paint and has the audio. It makes it a lot more easier. So I am planning on putting out one DVD, which is going to have the breakdown of this gate tutorial, where I will be basically starting from scratch with my layouts and all the drawings and sort of showing or sharing people how I have completed this particular project. And then the second DVD will have the breakdowns on the 3D portion of it, you know, how is the geometry built. Even though I used Maya, I got into ZBrush lately. It's been about 6 months, and I've used it for various film projects also. And it's a great tool to really go in and sort of touch up the geometry that you have to create some of the projections even a lot more detailed, just so you can see XYZ surfaces. And I will go over that on this DVD, which is pretty much, you know, two DVDs. One is the 2D matte painting portion, and the other one will be the 3D part of it, just sort of showing how to do simple projections and put a move on the final shot. And I'm hoping to get those out probably this year, maybe end of July or August, where I will have updates on this on the Lab Organica art forum.
Great. Well, thanks very much for giving us your time this evening.
Oh, no problem.
And I loved your work, and we'll, of course, have images from the what we've been discussing on our site and a link over to your site. And and hopefully when the DVD comes out, we can flag where they can go. I think they can actually leave their name on your site, can't they, if they're interested, and then when it comes out, you'll email them.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if there's anything needed, you guys can email me, and I also greatly appreciate your time and the opportunity to contribute, you know, to this particular matte painting obsession that you have.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Mike and Alp. Make sure you check out the images that go along with this story on the FX Guide site. Also, if you're looking for a unique gift for a visual effects professional, check the Lab Organica link at the bottom of that story. Alp has introduced a line of collectible resin models from his graphic novel that would be a great gift idea. So that's it for this FX podcast. Thanks for listening. For Mike Seymour and John Montgomery, I'm Jeff Huser.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.